Welcome to the Lifetime Body Podcast, where we discuss how to kick ass for life through the pursuit of ultimate wellness, peak performance, and maximum longevity. Kicking ass for life is not just about achieving health or fitness or long lifespans alone. It's about totally kicking ass at everything you do in life. In every episode, join me, author and human performance expert John Zombro, and my amazing co-hosts and guests. We'll dive into the science of exercise physiology, biomechanics, nutrition, physical therapy, lifestyle, and more to meld the concepts of optimal living and advanced training. You'll explore how to look, feel, and perform your best as you live your healthiest, happiest, most successful, and longest life. Let's kick ass for life. Hey folks, welcome to episode 42 of the Lifetime Body Podcast. I'm your host, John Zombro, and today is a People with Perspective show. I'm really excited to have the chance to visit with Kevin Davis. Kevin and I have been acquaintances for several years. We've crossed paths a few times in some professional capacities, and we also have several mutual friends. But the real backstory for this interview comes from something that happened last year in my living room. My wife Eileen and I were sitting on the couch one evening, and she was surfing through some programming that she was hoping might be worthy of watching. I wasn't paying too much attention as usual, as I was lost in some thoughts and ideas about who knows what in wellness and performance, or general ass-kicking. A film by Clyde Park, Montana photographer and videographer Eric Peterson entitled A Few Steps Further appeared on the screen. I was familiar with this artist's work from another project he did entitled The Hard Way, about the late Bob Hayes, who was a pioneer in fitness and practical, rugged living. As A Few Steps Further began to roll, it revealed itself. And it revealed itself to be an insightful film about a guy who hunts and runs. But much more than that, this movie also provided a deep look into the spirituality of those pursuits and what is perhaps an even larger picture of wild lands, access, and the human experience in the natural world. I quickly became captivated by the film and then rapidly realized, hey, I know that guy. It was Kevin Davis. It became clear to me that we had a lot in common, more than I ever knew, actually, and that this guy had viewpoints and an expressive ability that our podcast listenership would just without doubt love to experience. And so without further ado, I want to give a heartfelt welcome and some sincere appreciation to Kevin for joining us today. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Thanks, John. It's good to be here.
Indeed, an honor for me. So I'll say a few things about you that I know, and feel free to jump in if that's not adequate. But Kevin's a husband. He's a father of two teenage daughters, a software sales professional, and an all-around great guy. So I say that. I think many other people probably do as well. He's a lifelong hunter, an athlete with a broad background in a variety of sports, an enthusiast in whole foods nutrition and the field-to-table journey. Kevin is also an advocate for public lands. These are some of the topics that we're going to cover today, and I think you'll really enjoy this conversation. So in getting started, Kevin, if I may ask, how did you wind up being featured in A Few Steps Further?
So it was through a mutual acquaintance. I'd trained with Dr. Doug Wadley for quite some time, and he introduced me to a buddy of his, Eric Peterson, and we began training together and really discovered we both had a very strong passion for endurance running, and then also became very familiar with each other around hunting. We were both big hunters and then started to notice the crossover between our endurance training and how it helped us better enjoy our hunting.
Were there any major takeaways that you could offer up from the, you know, just the process of being in a film?
Yeah. So that was a big learning. Eric approached me and wanted to do this film around a big run and a big hunt. And of course, I was eager to go do both because I love to do both. And as we got through the process and started to get deeper into it, a few things really did come to light, and the first one was really around the hard work it takes to make a film like this. Eric is he's a world-class athlete, you know, and I know that I was the subject of the film, but everything that I did on film, Eric did behind the scenes, packing equipment and things along those lines. And so that was a big takeaway from that. And then also the amount of humility it took to actually pull this project off, having a camera in your face for some of your harder moments was definitely a learning for me, being somewhat of a prideful private person. Eric having to film me in some of my more compromising positions during races, hunts, things like that. It was a strong pill to swallow just around the humility and the realization of that.
Yeah, I think what I was impressed by was your willingness to be vulnerable, because as you indicated, it was a big run and a big hunt. And so just to make sure that the audience knows how actually big those things were, you know, you were on an Alaskan mountain goat hunt in extremely steep terrain, rugged conditions, mm-hmm. weather, the usual Alaska experience. And then in addition to that, the Hard Rock 100 miles at high elevation was the run that you did. And so these are extremely great accomplishments. First of all, congratulations on, what you do and have done. But wow, this was big stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's no doubt about it. And Hard Rock was the film itself was, it was a success in the end. As Eric liked to say, without the struggle, there was no story. And I'd finished much more successfully in years past. So having a less than stellar performance captured on film was definitely, it taught me a lot, but I was proud of it in the end.
Oh, that's outstanding. So let's get into, a few other things in addition to your experience with the film. What is your sports and fitness background?
So it was definitely a very average middle class athletic upbringing. Classic kid that played football. I wrestled, did some things in the spring usually, but took some time off. And so as I grew older, I was becoming more successful around wrestling and football, and then ended up going to college at the University of Wyoming. Ended up walking on the wrestling team and wrestled 2 years there, and that didn't go so well. So ended up not dropping out of the wrestling program, and I began playing rugby. I had a good buddy of mine who was from Britain, and he was going to school at Wyoming, and he thought I'd be a good rugby player. So starting, I believe it was around 2003 or four, I began playing rugby, and I played rugby until about 2001 when I moved to Montana. And I ballooned up to 225 pounds and was your average beer swilling, poor eating, rugby guy. We spent a lot of time in the weight room.
I saw a few photographs and, burly is a word that I would say. You've got the rugged beard and there's a flannel shirt, and I recognize you immediately as a stout drinking, rugby playing, pub brawling, perhaps, yes, kind of guy.
All of the above, unfortunately, at times.
and so how did you wind up from those experiences becoming an ultra marathon runner?
Yeah, that is a funny, that was a funny story and a funny evolution. So it was 2004. I had my first daughter, Stella. And at that point, I definitely started to languish around exercising and getting to the gym. I'd moved to Montana 3 years before, and the gym wasn't as accessible. And having a new child in the house, I was definitely not exercising like I needed to be. And I had seen, a big hero of mine was Dwight Shue, and there were some other guys coming on the scene around that were doing a lot of fitness training for hunting. And so I thought, heck, and my wife was a runner all through our relationship. So one day I decided I was going to go for a run just because I wasn't getting exercise. I didn't feel well. And I attempted a run and made it less than a mile before I had to stop and walk. Mm-hmm. And that's really where the title for Eric's film, A Few Steps Further, that's where the title for that film came from, was from that first run where I failed to even make it a mile, I vowed that I would go out and run every day. And if I had only made it a few steps further, I only made it a few steps further. And that's where it all began.
That's a great story. And so for our audience, who many may know and a few might not, Dwight Shue is a famous hunter, famous bow hunter, mm-hmm. and certainly someone who, brought the concept of fitness into training for hunting. And I know you're also influenced by Cameron Haynes, who has, mm-hmm. Done a lot of those things. And I think we, in this community we live in, Southwest Montana, there's quite a few of us who share, many of those passions, that being hunting and bow hunting and fitness as well. What would be one of the allures for you for running in the mountains?
Oh, wow. It tails right into that story. So I had some friends who were sort of hiking the M and Baldy, which is a prominent peak here in our own Bridger Mountains. And so one day I hiked Baldy with a buddy and we saw a bunch of runners, and the amount of ground they were covering and the way they were doing it was pretty inspiring at the time. So yeah, it was probably the next week I put on my road shoes, and I'd been only run on the road. I put on my road shoes and I began this ascent of Baldy, and then I began the descent down Baldy, and I was absolutely amazed at how quickly you could move through the mountains and the amount of territory you could see and the cool things you saw. And so from that weekend, it was going out and covering more distance, because moving through the mountains and getting to see what you see and the experience versus running on the road, it was total zen for me. I was into it from the first moment. And that's really where the allure or the attractiveness of running in the mountains, I mean, that's really what it's all about.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like the best of both or many worlds. You get the moving light and fast and the outdoor experience.
Yep.
And you move fast through the mountains. I'm not sure I can say that about myself anymore.
Yeah, I'm not as fast as I used to be.
I think there's a song in that somewhere.
Yeah, no kidding.
So let's talk about hunting just a bit. I know, mm-hmm. you and I are both lifelong hunters, but what about, what could you offer about your career as a hunter?
Oh, man. Hunting for me is, I'd give up running before I gave up hunting. Beyond my family, hunting is my absolute favorite thing to do. It's my greatest joy. And, for a lot of people that are maybe getting into hunting later in life or things like that, for me specifically, it's really all about that connection with nature, that natural renewal when I'm out in the woods, and that real, I guess it sounds sort of corny, but it's sort of a spiritual thing when you're out there, battling it out in the woods and having those great experiences. There is something very, very enriching about that for me spiritually. And it's something that there's no doubt about it. I could not live without. I remember when I was courting my wife, she's from the East Coast, and one of my big fears was she was going to try and attempt to move closer to the East Coast, back to family and things like that. Sure. It might've been our third date or something. I told her, I go, I will never move anywhere besides where we're at now, because I can't live without hunting. So for me, that's really what it's boiled down to, is that connection and that renewal.
And obviously you're such a charming fellow. She acquiesced.
I don't know about that. We should get her and interview her on that next time.
I hear you. And, I think I agree with what you're saying. It's a very primal way to connect with nature and our ancestral roots. And it's difficult to describe indeed. That's such a natural and instinctive pursuit. Mm-hmm. Are there any parallels that, you could share that are between the type of running that you do and also that hunting experience?
Oh, sure. Big thing is really just it's kind of two sides of the coin. It's the amount of focus and concentration it takes at times to be successful, both hunting and running. It requires a lot of preparation, and then the execution can be very demanding at times, because you have to be concentrated and you have to focus and perform at the right times. But then on the other side of that coin, you also have to just be completely and totally relaxed and just, you know, really just letting it go. And on both sides, I believe like the human body, nature, things like that take care of itself. So if you're prepared, you're in the moment, but then you also just let it happen. Those are two things that definitely parallel between the running and the hunting that will make you successful in both, depending on what you define as success.
Mm-hmm. And in addition to that ethos, mm-hmm. You know, I think that there is a skill set, you know, let's just say it's one of survival, of durability, of, you know, being able to get into the natural world and thrive.
Yeah.
And, you know, I felt that when I watched the film and I saw you using your trekking pole to trench the downpour away from your tent. And I thought, this guy's, he's thinking.
No, and that is definitely something else that goes into both of those, is that willingness to sort of be uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Hunting, as you can tell probably by watching that film, that wasn't a 5-star Orvis endorsed guided, you know, vacation hunt. That was pretty uncomfortable a lot of the time. In executing on a big race, well, we call it type 2 fun, where you look back at it and you're like, that was fun, but in the moment it wasn't that mm-hmm. fun, and you have to be super willing to be uncomfortable. So that's definitely another parallel, as you mentioned.
Yeah, I think these things, they shape us, and we don't want to get too comfortable in this modern world and get away from that. Just a quick thought, you know, from the film, and you know, it looks like that shot you made on your mountain goat mm-hmm. was on a really steep mountainside. Did you adjust for the incline?
Luckily, it was close enough. He was less than 100 yards embedded. It was really just getting a good angle on him at the time, so I didn't have to compensate or anything along those lines. But you're right, that mountain was wildly steep where he was bedded, and just getting to that goat was a death-defying experience for me, that's for sure.
Yeah, I remember enjoying, you know, it was great cinematography, and looking down at the river, it's a long way down. Of course, you know, when you're standing there, it's a lot different than when one's viewing it on the screen. So yeah. I was incredibly amazed, impressed. So we're both big fans of wild game for both its nutritional value and also kind of participating in that whole field to table journey. If I try to dig into that subject, do you end up eating a lot of wild meat at home?
So I would say of our lean protein, of our meat that we eat in my household, 99% of it is wild game. My wife was a vegetarian when I met her, and I harvested a moose in 2000, I think it was, and she'd never had wild game, and I conned her into trying it, and she has been hooked ever since. So I'm in charge seasonally or yearly, annually, whatever you want to say, to stocking the freezer. And now that my oldest daughter Stella is 14, she's done a very good job of stocking our freezer. So we eat 99% wild game in our house. Beef is a rare, it can be a rare treat because beefsteak can be good and things along those lines. But for us, no, it's all about the wild game. And it provides us substance, but it's also that the experience of going out and getting it, because basically the whole family hunts now.
You are all, I just made this up, PPOs, Protein Procurement Officers.
That is exactly what I am. And then I have all my directors and SVPs underneath me. So yeah, no, we are, organizationally, we are a protein-driven family.
So what's the, you know, how would you describe your, you know, your overall diet that you and your family consume?
So we eat very, very clean, I would say. It's lean protein, a lot of fruits, a lot of vegetables, and as little sugar, carbohydrate, starch as possible, and certainly nothing processed. You know, kids, if you give them a bag of burritos, they love that. It's a big treat.
Sure.
Granola bars are somewhat of a staple in the kids' diet, but we really do eat clean, and certainly nothing processed if possible.
So folks, listen to that. Hopefully that reverberates, because here's a guy that says, you know, there's no place for junk food in, you know, his or his family's diet. And he's also a guy who, you know, does extreme backcountry hunting and 100-mile runs. And he does it on, you know, a fairly low carbohydrate, you know, fueling system. And just another example of how appropriate that can be.
Yeah. Yeah. The only real carbohydrate allowed in our house is beer.
And there, you know, I think it was Benjamin Franklin that said, you know, beer is proof that God loves us and wants us to be happy.
Exactly.
So what are a couple of the favorite dishes in the home?
So it's pretty funny. It's another couple ends of the spectrum. It's either going to be a straight up plain grilled steak. That's my preferable. That's my favorite. There's a grilled steak with something good on the side, whether it be asparagus or something along those lines, or just a big healthy green salad. Or on the other side, it's going to be barbacoa, shredded roast, something with some spice, and then we usually eat that in lettuce tortilla sort of wrap type thing. Mm-hmm. You know, the kids usually go tortillas, and wife Alyssa and I go lettuce wrap, but that's usually got some cheese and things like that on it. So it's kind of funny. It goes either from a plain steak all the way over to the other side to a real, you know, good spicy sort of ethnic or Latin pulled roast.
What's the barbacoa recipe?
You're actually gonna have to ask my wife on that one. It's just slow roasted, and it's got a pile of like cumin and smoked paprika, and then a little bit of red wine vinegar to break it down, but keep it spicy. Mm-hmm. So I can get you the recipe if you really need it.
Yeah, I'll share it with the listeners, because I can smell and taste
Those are the two favorites for sure.
So can you tell a difference in your training and recovery from eating this type of diet, which sounds like you've been doing for quite a while, mm-hmm. Versus, maybe times in the past when the diet's been a little bit closer to the standard American diet?
Yeah. So the difference is, for me, it's really all around. It makes me feel one way. So when eating the way I eat now, I can go further, feel better, and then my recovery isn't quite as dramatic versus traditional diet. I can definitely get the distance done. I don't feel as good, and it takes more fuel while I'm doing it. Mm-hmm. So it really becomes, it's a much more efficient process to eat clean, train, recover versus not eat as clean, still get the miles done, don't feel as good. Recovery is a little bit more rocky. Mm-hmm. So you can get to the end goal both ways. But for me, getting as old and I'd like to say as wise as I'm getting, mm-hmm. it's much smarter going with the clean diet versus my old diet.
Honestly. And would you say, if we say you're a low carb athlete, let's just call you that. Are your hydration demands or needs less on a low carbohydrate diet than on a high carbohydrate diet?
For me personally, I'd say they're about the same when it comes to hydration. Mm-hmm. The nice part is I just don't need the amount of calories, glucose, things like that with the hydration. Mm-hmm. Hydration has never been too big of an issue for me. And I'm not good at hydrating, mm-hmm. but I've always been successful with the way I do it. So I haven't had to change it versus my diet and the way that I fuel. I got better the better I fueled. That's really what it came down to.
And I'd kind of throw this out in your favor. You know, anyone who has successfully completed marathons, ultra marathons, a number of them that you have done, mm-hmm. And you've done it without getting exhausted, injured, having chronic inflammatory states, you know, decreasing your health and your lifespan. So that's really, I think that's a message that, you know, I'd like to have folks here. It's like, hey, you know, here's this guy who's, you know, he's smart and he's strong and he trains, but he also eats well and he's very spiritual about how he goes out there and does things. And that's the way we need to do it. Not, unfortunately, the way some people are, are doing and struggling.
Yeah, absolutely. And coupling the diet, I started to cross train a lot, strength at the gym, playing indoor soccer, cross-country skiing, and that has helped tremendously with longevity, injury prevention, information, things along those lines. So I'm still getting everything done that I need to during the racing season, but I'm going about it a lot different than I was six, 8 years ago.
And I think that's true for athletes at any age to be versatile and be durable, but particularly as we do get older, finding that balance of training that keeps our bodies viable at the same time we can work on specialized sports goals. That's really a great pearl of wisdom that you just shared. So let's dive into Wildlands and their role in the human experience and our responsibility to be advocates for access and preservation of those places. What say you?
Wow. So, I mean, it's a big, broad topic, and a lot of viewpoints come into it. And so, this last week, we signed S-47 into law, which is a great thing. And there are so many people that have helped affect changes like that. And for me personally, I'm an advocate. I'm not an activist. I use different conservation programs and organizations like BHA to really elevate my voice. I let them really elevate my voice. And so I definitely have my beliefs, and I'll do what I need to do to make sure that BHA is empowered, or Elk Foundation, or whomever it is, to really get that message across. Mm-hmm. So public lands is something we can all agree on the necessity around. Federally controlled public lands, being able to get there and having them in good shape when you get there, whether you're a Patagonia athlete and you're a vegetarian and you don't believe in hunting, you know what? You and I are going to share the same trail at some point. Me as a hunter, I'm a Patagonia athlete on one end, but I'm also I'm a hunter on the other end. So we can all find that common ground that will help us elevate our cause and really keep everything accessible, because my daughters, I want them to have access to what I've had the privilege to have access to my whole life. Mm-hmm. And with some of the things coming down the pipe, we definitely need to pay more attention to.
Yeah, I think you hit on that. And by the way, for the folks listening, BHA, Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, we need this collaboration. I think anyone who loves being out there on the natural landscape, has at some level to accept that we all have this right to be able to do that, but also a responsibility to maintain it both for ourselves and future generations.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So it's all about doing what you can, but make sure that you're involved in some way, shape, or form. Leverage organizations, leverage conservation groups. You don't have to be in the thick and down at the Capitol, doing your thing. Do what you can, but be active.
Yeah, and I like the way you described the vegan Patagonia athlete, and without condemnation and name calling, and basically just saying, hey, we're all going to be there, and let's find a way to be classy and work together.
Yeah, and that's one cool thing I think that's coming strong right now is how everybody, those types of athletes versus hunters and everybody in the middle. You really are starting to see this united front around everyone needs public access. Everyone needs these lands to go truly enjoy and get it done. So that's something that's really cool to see, is some of these groups standing shoulder to shoulder.
Absolutely. So let's get into training. This is the lifetime body, man. And you do some things. You alluded to that earlier. You talked about, doing a variety of things to keep yourself, mobile and supple and all those words that, everyone's going to say about you. But in general terms, how do you break up your year with respect to seasons or anything like that?
I'm pretty lucky because I have the ability to be really active all year round without actually being conscious of it. So the year starts January 1st, and usually my race schedule is sort of more or less figured out by January 1st. Mm. And so from January 1st, usually until midsummer, is a lot of training, getting ready for races. I've been fortunate enough to run Hard Rock the last 4 out of 5 years, and then I had a couple other races in there, but I'm usually done racing by mid-July. So Once we move into mid-July, there's some smaller local races, but I'm not training at all. I'm going and having fun. And then it's pretty sweet because come September 1st, it's hunting season. So then it's time to get into the backcountry and go cover ground and chase elk and do things like that. And that keeps me super active September, October, into November, Thanksgiving. And then Thanksgiving rolls around and then you get the 6 weeks of complete and total indulgence where I'd like to say I train, but I think there'd be some people out there that know me that would say you don't train at all between Thanksgiving and New Year's, because it's, you know, happy time and lots going on. So it's really broken into those three big areas and they kind of, you know, some are smaller and bigger than others, but you get the big training and racing block and then you get hunting season and then you get a month or two off for the holidays and then it's back to work.
Yeah, I think that fits a you know, you described it in a very casual way, but that's a very sports specific model. You know, you've got this preseason build up and then you're in season doing the, you know, the races in the summer. You know, there's kind of a kind of an extension of that is slightly differently with what you're doing in hunting in the fall. And then everybody should have a downtime. You know, that's when, you know, you don't train and you allow your body to recover. And, you know, you put your focus on the other things in life that you need to attend to or celebrate. And so, you know, that's a, hey, this guy's a balanced person, folks. he's not a freak. And well, maybe you're a freak of nature in some ways. But so what are you doing like right now, like, you know, this week? Just give us a couple of like sample workouts.
Let's see. So this week, well, with the snowpocalypse that we've had the last month, getting out on the road and running has been a little bit more difficult. So I've been committing a little bit more time to the gym and some indoor soccer sessions and things like that. But for this week, I played indoor soccer Monday. I ran Tuesday, played indoor soccer on Wednesday, ran yesterday, went to the gym this morning. And then tomorrow I'm going to attempt my first 20-mile run of the season. Roads are coming clear. Weather's going to be good. And if it takes me 4 or 5 hours, I don't care. I'm just covering the distance. And then get that done and go down to the run to the pub and have a couple beers with some buddies.
Sure.
And then Sunday, take the day off and then sort of begin that all over again on Monday, something that looks like that.
Okay. So here's a question for you. If I was only to ask, you know, what's your favorite workout? I think I already know what the answer would be. A long run in the mountains is probably what you're going to say. But outside of that, what's your favorite workout in terms of either, is it another type of running workout or is it something that you do in the gym or soccer or what have you?
So probably my second favorite workout, and this is going to sound funny because it's wildly punishing, but our track workouts. We usually start 1st of April and Doug Wadley, who I mentioned earlier, he usually runs those and we do them. We call it Tuesday Night Training TNT in Livingston. And a group of us meet up at the high school track on Tuesday nights. And we just go out and whatever workout Doug has prescribed for the night, we go out and run it. And, you know, whether it's, you know, 10 by 800 or, you know, whatever it is, whatever ladder, anything along those lines. And those track workouts, they are suffer fest. but they're short and they're super rewarding in the end. We usually run down to the pub and get a beer afterwards. But my second favorite would definitely have to be our speed and strength work.
Yeah. Well, okay. So folks, listen to this. Here's a guy, you know, he runs 100 miles. We know this, but, he also loves high intensity training, you know, high intensity interval training. And some of those workouts he's talking about are the things that, improve VO2 max or lactate threshold and even leg speed. And so, to be a complete athlete, one has to embrace, you know, all aspects of training. And I think that's probably why you're, you know, healthy and successful, you know, quite frankly. Let's see. I've got a couple things queued up here. Well, this is the opposite. What do you struggle with most in training?
Ooh, that's a good one. Consistency. Had a great this year, for an example, had a great January, got a pile of miles in. We had super mellow, mild weather. And then February came around and it got cold, it got snowy, weather got bad. And the lack of consistency February has me behind the eight ball on. And I've seen this in other years, maybe with an injury or something along those lines. the inconsistent training gets you behind the eight ball, and then you sort of get that urgency that I need to go out and make up for it, which can't anymore because I'm getting old and things get hurt. So it's the consistency and then being patient with the process. So right now I'm behind the eight ball because of February, but I can be patient. I've got till June, till Bighorn. So I'm going to be patient, just get my miles and move on from there. So I would say it's the consistency and the patience.
Sounds like there's wisdom in there too. is the Bighorn run the big goal for this year?
Yeah. Yeah. So I didn't get into Hard Rock this year. I didn't get drawn in the lottery. So I am going to run the Bighorn 100. I think it's June 16th, mid-June. So that's the big go. And then I'm going to do some smaller local races then through June and July here locally.
Sounds like a good schedule. So the movie, it starts out, you saying, I believe to yourself as a mantra of sorts, make every step count. Mm-hmm. Does that apply to life?
Oh yeah. Yeah. That resonated with me. I actually heard someone say that in 2008. I was out in Squaw Valley and I was supposed to run Western States, and it got canceled, got canceled because of fire. The run got canceled because of fire.
Gotcha.
And so I was talking to some runners, and it was going to be my first 100. And we were talking about something or other, and I go out, well, we're getting invited back next year. I guess we'll have to make every step count next year. And some guy found that sort of profound, and he's like, you're the make every step count guy. And that's what he called me the rest of the time we were out there. And so that just stuck with me. And so when things get hard for me, whether it's life, training, whatever, you know, I sometimes go back to it and just make every step count.
Good words to live by. So there are many perspectives on living this rich, balanced life. I think we all try for that. And, you know, you and I talked a bit before we got started on that topic. Just got a few kind of almost like lightning round thoughts just to shoot at you, if I may.
Yeah.
So what about parenting?
Oh. Parenting is the hardest, most rewarding thing I've ever done. You know, you bring kids into the world and you think you're going to shape these little human beings into who they are. And you definitely have a degree of that, but for me, they've shaped me more than I've shaped them. You know, my kids are solid little beings, and they've definitely got their own personalities. And so I've had to adjust just me more for them than vice versa. So parenting, it's an awesome ride. I mean, you as a parent, you know the ups and downs. It's an awesome ride. I'm the annoying, doting dad. I love my girls, and they're super, super awesome, but they challenge me. It's hard.
Yeah.
Upsets me at times, but in the end, you know, I can start to see the light at the end of the tunnel, and in the end, it's going to be a neat ride.
Great to participate in that journey with them, you know, through their life. So how about putting energy into athletics? How can that give back multiplicatively in other areas of life?
You know, for me, I would say it's just the big learning. Most of the time in athletics, you get out what you put in. And I think that goes in life also. There are times in athletics when you put a lot in, don't get a lot out. That's the way it is in life too. So, you know, for me, it's just that overall rounding and holistic lesson around you get out what you put in. You know, I've had horrible races because I didn't put the work in. And I've had horrible deals at work blow up because I didn't put the work in, and then vice versa. So for me, it's really come to that what you put in, you're going to get out in the end.
Meat does not come from the grocery store. A comment.
For me, you're right. Meat doesn't come from the grocery store. And it's not because I have anything against beef or grocery stores. It's because I like the whole act of getting the meat. Granted, I believe it tastes better, and my family believes the same thing. But it's all about the act of getting to meet. It's the hunt. It's the time with my family. It's being outside. It's the whole enchilada is really what drives me to not eat beef.
Yeah, what I'm feeling from you saying that is that there's that connection. It's like you're not just picking up a package that you don't have any, you didn't have a role in, and yep. this investment is, life. I don't want to say life changing, but life supporting.
Yeah. As I mentioned earlier, if I couldn't hunt, I don't know what I'd do. It is beyond family. It is my favorite thing.
So, we're sitting here not too far from where Lewis and Clark convened on the Three Forks of the Missouri River. And it's written in the journals by Meriwether Lewis that each man ate 10 pounds of meat per day. And I think that's fairly well substantiated. But there also were roles in the expedition. And there were some folks who were scouts and navigators, and others who were dragging the keel boats upstream. I'm glad I wasn't around for that.
Yeah.
But there were several folks who were designated hunters who paralleled the expedition and procured the meat for every man to have the 10 pounds per night. And you were one of those guys. You would have been if you were there.
Yeah, I would have chosen that duty had I been there. But hopefully, one thing I've also learned is, turning something into a job kind of ruins it. So, I have some buddies who are guides and outfitters, and I've always asked them about, what it's like to be a professional. And they said, yeah, if you want to ruin hunting, become a guide.
I can relate to that. I think also sometimes we have to, if you want to be a coach or a trainer, you still got to find a way to be enthused about athletics for yourself.
Exactly. You probably know as well as anyone.
I'm a student of everything. So I think we're hitting on this one, but what do you think about not taking yourself or life too seriously?
Oh man. I had a talk with my daughter about it last night. Just around, there's a level of humility with life, and there's definitely a time to be serious. But especially as a 15-year-old girl, there are a few things you need to take serious, but the majority of everything you can lighten up on yourself. And so me being 48 now, 10 years ago, I took things probably way more serious, whether it was work, training, things along those lines. So now this level of humility around just, it is what it is. And I know what I need to put in to get out what I want. So with that realization, everything else becomes peripheral. It's just, it is what it is, and it comes and it goes, and you can't take anything too seriously, but what you want to get done.
I'm making this up as we go along, but it sounds like you're saying simplicity is the recipe for joy.
Yeah.
So final thing, and this is it's fun. It's really exciting to visit with you, Kevin. And I certainly appreciate it. I want to offer up some tips to the listeners, and I've kind of got two ideas, and I think I want to do one at a time. This is your chance, I guess, to pick any part of what I'm about to say and just throw out what you've learned, something you've learned or that might be of value, knowing our audience. And so having said all that, with hunting, butchering, meat care, preparing, celebrating wild game, what's a pearl of wisdom?
That's a good question. I would just say really embrace and honor the animal. That sounds a little deep, I'm sure, especially people who know me, but there's definitely there's a duty in taking an animal's life, and that is maximizing what that animal is giving you. So just making sure you're on top of things and maximizing the harvest and taking that seriously. Don't be wasteful.
Yeah, that's it speaks to reverence, and I feel the same way. And so now, in parting, we want to get a pearl of wellness wisdom or kicking ass at life, peak performance wisdom, training, racing, recovery. You might have hit a few of those nuggets already, but in parting, what's one aspect there?
Oh, wow. That's a good one, and I think I'm prepared for that one. it never goes as you think it's going to go, whether it's your training, whether it's your race, whether it's your recovery. You have to be adaptable. You have to be flexible and you have to be patient, whether it's your training, whether it's your recovery. Racing, the most I've learned is it never goes to script and it never goes the way you want it to go. Sometimes you just got to go with it. And you just have to be flexible, adaptable, and patient.
I couldn't have said it better. but folks, definitely, you know, take that as a great pearl. You know, be non-rigid in thinking and try to get into that flow state as much as possible, because, you know, a lot of these sporting things and training, if we fight, we don't win.
No. And in the end, you're lucky to be able to do it. You know, people that are listening to this that have the ability to eat well and that are able enough to exercise and go do the things that you and I like to do, we're lucky to be able to do it. So you need to enjoy it.
Yep. Absolutely. And so many, many thanks to you, Kevin. I really appreciate your time and sharing this inspirational messages with our audience and to the folks listening. Hey, we love you, here at TLB, and I always appreciate you joining in. What I'll make sure I'll do is I will post a link to A Few Steps Further in the show notes, just so you can access that great film by Eric Peterson, starring Kevin Davis, your star, and certainly you're a star for being here with me today. So thanks again.
Thanks a lot, John. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us on the Lifetime Body Podcast, where we kick ass for life through the attainment of ultimate wellness and the pursuit of peak performance and maximum longevity. If you are enjoying this content, please leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to the show and share it with your friends and family. Also, check out thelifetimebody.com, where you can access a variety of publications and media that can help you achieve the highest levels of health, fitness, success, and happiness. And be sure to subscribe to the weekly Kick-Ass for Life update, which keeps you real-time on the latest releases from TLB. Until next time, this is the Lifetime Body, where science meets common sense and where we help you kick ass for life.